Assemble the Pond podcast. I am your host, Kate, and each week we'll be taking a deep dive into a random topic that has sparked my interest. This week's topic comes from a prior episode where we were talking about various aspects of the brain, and I mentioned some of the psychological experiments that were done in the early 60s and 70s. But before we get into today's topic, I just wanted to say that I hope that you're all having a wonderful Friday and are looking forward to the weekend ahead. This is my third attempt to start recording this episode. We have had some technical difficulties this week, so fingers crossed that all comes out well and I will be able to publish this episode. Getting back to the topic. So today's topic is regarding the Milgram shock experiment. This was done in the early 1960s by Stanley Milgram at Yale University. In one of the previous episodes, like I said, we had talked about these experiments that were done that were less than ethical, or these experiments that were done that had some ethical concerns surrounding them. There were several during this time period, and I may end up doing a deep dive into each of them. But this is the one that I chose partly because I find it incredibly interesting, and also because I remember when I was in college, I took 101 psychology as an elective, and I learned about this particular experiment during that class. So what is the experiment itself? Well, in the aftermath of the atrocities committed by Nazi Germany, Milgram wanted to investigate obedience to authority. Now, his original experiment was going to look at the obedience to authority found within the U.S. population, and then he was going to compare the results to a study that he wanted to conduct in Germany with the German population to see if there was some difference in the German population that made them more likely to respond to authority or more likely to bend to the will of authority. He didn't end up doing that because his results with the American test subjects were so wild that he didn't even feel the need to continue with the German side of the equation. In the initial experiment, which is the one that is most widely recognized, he included 40 males between the ages of 20 and 50 with a wide range of occupations and education levels. Each of them actually answered a newspaper ad that requested subjects for this study, offering to pay them $4.50 for their time. Now, the procedure was rigged, so the volunteers always got the role of teacher, and then the learner and experimenter roles were in on the experiment itself. So the teacher, which is the actual test subject, would go through a series of word pairs, and then the learner, who knew that this was rigged, would have to correctly match the pairs by memory. Every time the learner answered incorrectly, the teacher had to give them a shock. Now, as I said, the learner already was in on the experiment, so the wrong answers that they gave were predetermined. And as the shocks got stronger, the learner would get increasingly more vocal regarding the pain until he stopped responding altogether. The actual device that the shocks were administered from, it wasn't actually giving shocks, first of all, but the teacher or the test subject didn't actually know that, but it was labeled from 15 volts on the low end to 450 volts on the high end, with increasingly severe warnings for each level. So at 15 volts, it would say harmless or minor or whatever, and then at the highest voltage, it said XXX, and then in between, it was, you know, moderate, severe, whatever the case may be. The experimenter, who was also aware of what they were actually testing, would urge the teacher to keep going with increasingly commanding statements. So they started off more gentle, and then each time the teacher tried to refuse giving a shock, the prompts that the experimenter was supposed to give would get more and more commanding as they went on. Now, the results were really interesting to this experiment. Like I said, the results were so unexpected that Milgram did not even worry about doing further experimentation with different populations. Prior to the experiment, Milgram surveyed psychiatrists who predicted 0.1% of participants would administer the maximum shocks, expecting most people to stop somewhere between 150 and 300 volts, especially once they heard the learner's protests, which included claiming that he had a heart condition as the shocks got more severe. Now, interestingly enough, 65% of the participants went all the way to 450 volts. Now, if you'll remember, there was only 40 test subjects, so that means that 26 of them went to the maximum amount of voltage. However, 100% of the study participants made it to at least 300 volts. Every participant at some point questioned the procedure, and many openly pleaded to stop or offered to return their payment. 14 of the participants showed nervous laughter or smiling. And I went off on a little tangent with this and looked up what that actually means, or looked up why people have nervous laughter, because I am a nervous laugher. So it comes in really inappropriate situations. And it's incredibly annoying to have to deal with, because people around you are somber or serious or freaking out or whatever, and you are laughing or smiling. And it's just an uncontrollable thing for me anyways, or I try my best to control it, but it still happens. And according to the article that I read, nervous laughter can help discharge the negative energy of anxiety, allowing someone to downregulate emotional discomfort. It can also be viewed as a defense mechanism to protect someone from being overcome with anxiety, trying to uphold cognitive functioning in the face of a perturbing situation, which if you think about it, makes sense. So it's a really highly intense situation that you're in, or it's a highly emotional situation that you're in, or anxiety inducing, whatever the case may be, and your brain is trying to stay in its cognitive function realm and not be pushed into sort of that fight or flight realm where you're just concerned about survival. So it's trying to let the pressure off the situation in your own emotional response so that you can deal with whatever the situation may be. Now, other observed behaviors included sweating, trembling, stuttering, biting lips, and one participant even had a seizure during the study. Milgram claimed that all participants were properly debriefed after the conclusion of the experiments, which we will get to a little bit later on. And he also ran 24 different variations of this experiment in the early 60s with a total of 780 participants. The different variations that he ran would change different variables of the original experiment. So, for example, in one of the variations, they changed location from Yale to a generic research building to see if the prestige that was associated with Yale encouraged people to be more obedient. And in fact, they did find that when they moved it to this generic building, 47.5% of participants were obedient. In another version, they made the teachers hold the learner's hand on the shock plate, and that resulted in a 30% obedience rate. The original experiment, the learner and the teacher were actually separated and they could just hear one another. And so this made the teacher be kind of like up close and personal with the learner, which resulted in that lower obedience rate. And then in another one, they had two experimenters give contradictory commands. So one experimenter would say, keep going, or do the different prompts that they needed to do. And then the second experimenter would say, I don't know, maybe we should wait, maybe we should go see if he's okay, maybe we need to stop. And in that case, there was a 0% obedience rate, meaning that 0% of the participants went all the way to the maximum voltage. Now, Milgram reached several different conclusions based on the results of his experiment. The first being that people appear more obedient to authority figures than expected. If you'll remember, the psychiatrist that he had talked to previously thought that it was going to be an extremely low obedience rate, especially because you were inflicting harm on another human being, and it ended up being way higher than they thought. The second conclusion he reached was that when people are given orders to act destructively, they'll experience high levels of stress and anxiety, which, I mean, duh. And then lastly, people are willing to harm someone if personal responsibility is taken away and passed on to someone else. This is what's known as agency theory, and he actually published a paper regarding the agency theory, I believe in 1974, if I'm remembering correctly. And this basically states that people will act as the agent for another person's will, and they do this for a couple of reasons, one of which is because the person giving orders is perceived as qualified qualified to direct others' behaviors, and the agent believes the authority will take responsibility for any consequences. So in this case, the teacher was the agent of the experimenter. And so they did these destructive things to the learner because they felt like they were doing it for an authority figure who had, you know, they had every reason to believe that they were not going to be causing serious harm to the learner. And two, they felt like the responsibility, you know, they were just carrying out the orders of the experimenter. So they didn't have that personal responsibility level associated with the task. In addition to those, he also acknowledged, and then other people who reviewed his work and research also acknowledged, that situational factors affect obedience. So things like institutional authority, authoritative uniform, gradual nature of the task, and contractual obligation were all factors that contributed to people's obedience in the different variations of the experiment that Milgram carried out. Now, as I mentioned, there were some ethical concerns regarding his work, and the four major ones are pretty big. And this is before, you have to remember, this is before we had any sort of regulations on what people could and couldn't do within their experiments, within psychological experiments and different testing regarding humans. And a lot of the experiments that we talk about now as being ethically dubious, I guess is the right word, they didn't have these regulations at the time. And it was because of these studies that people kind of stopped and were like, wait a minute, maybe it's important that we have some sort of standardization for how people are allowed to conduct experiments on other human beings. So the first of the ethical concerns is that there was no informed consent. So subjects were purposefully deceived about the nature of the experiment and possible risks of participating. Afterward, Milgram used the general consent form that all subjects signed as his defense. But then as time has gone on and access to his archives within Yale have been granted, people have found that he had a manual titled Experimenter's Instructions, where it instructs the experimenter to use the payment of the subject as a distraction technique while having them sign the standard consent form. So basically, the experimenter would bring the teacher into the room and say, hey, I just have to have you sign a couple things. Oh, let me get your payment ready. And then he would slide the paperwork over and say, this is just our standard clearance form. Let me get your payment secured. I just need you to sign this real quick. And then here's your check. And so they would use that as a way to distract them from reading the actual document. And later, in another archived document dated October 16th, 1961, Milgram wrote, quote, the release was not used for experimental purposes, but to protect us against legal claims, end quote. So obviously he knew what he was doing in this regard. I don't know that he was being malicious in his experimenting with humans or anything like that, or I don't think he was trying to be malicious, but he also recognized that there were going to be side effects or an impact based off of the study, and knew that there needed to be some sort of protection in place. So that's why we have informed consent now for studies. The second ethical concern noted is that he denied subjects the right to withdraw. So Milgram claimed the prompts to keep going were delivered uniformly to all subjects. However, audio tapes from the archives reveal that experimenters often went off script and coerced subjects into continuing the shocks. In condition 20, which was women as subject, the experimenter insisted one subject continue 26 times. As a side note, this condition concluded with a 65% completion rate, but to equate this to the baseline condition is misleading, especially based off of the coercion that was used to get the women participants to complete the task. I don't think it is accurate to say that it is comparable to the initial experiment. And I don't actually know how coercive the experimenters were during the initial experiment. This is just kind of a general critique of his work, that they were not uniform in the delivery of the prompts that they were supposed to give. So it's hard to really say. Third, he recklessly exposed subjects to a variety of psychological harms. Despite suggestions from a Yale professor to institute preliminary medical screenings, Milgram never did so. One subject told Milgram that subsequent to his participation, he suffered a mild heart attack. So obviously, these subjects were subjected to a heavy psychological burden within this experiment. I mean, they really genuinely thought that they were hurting someone, and obviously, based off of their reactions, were upset about it, right? And so it makes sense that there would be some kind of lasting harm. Now, Milgram later on did say that he did follow up interviews and meetings with these different participants, and that majority of them were happy that they participated in the study, but I don't know how robust that information actually is. And I really wasn't able to find very much information about the participants after they finished the study. I did try to look it up and see, but other than, you know, the ones that mentioned the heart attack and the seizure, I don't really know what happened to the subjects after they concluded their experiments. The last major ethical concern with these experiments was that they failed to provide subjects with a post-experimental debriefing capable of restoring their well-being. So as I mentioned previously, Milgram claimed that every single test subject was debriefed after the experiments were concluded. However, Milgram provided subjects in conditions 19 through 24. So the variations, remember I said he did 24 variations of this experiment. So in numbers 19 through 24, those subjects got a full, honest debriefing. However, the first 70% of subjects in conditions 1 through 18 received incomplete, dishonest debriefings. So most of these people were told that the shock machine warnings were calibrated for mice, so the learner wasn't in as much pain as their reactions suggested. Milgram was worried that if he told the truth, that word would spread and the rest of the population in the area where he was grabbing test subjects from would know that the shocks were fake. So he wanted them to still believe that they were real, but just that they weren't that bad. Many subjects who were debriefed in the dishonest debriefings still sensed a level of that dishonesty, because one subject said that he checked an obituary column to confirm that he wasn't a contributing factor in the death of a so-called learner. And so they were obviously not fully believing that these shocks were minor or whatever the case may be. And one thing that I thought was interesting was that condition number 24 was the relationship condition, and Milgram actually buried the results of this particular condition because it was wild. So for that one, he asked people to come in pairs. So it would be like a wife and a husband, or a father and a son, or two friends, some kind of relation. You had to have some kind of relationship with the person that you were coming in with. And one of them would be the learner and one of them would be the teacher, and there would still be an experimenter present. They would pull the learner aside and explain what they were actually testing to them and say, hey, you have to pretend to be injured, or you have to pretend like this hurts. And then they would have the teacher administer the shocks. And this one had a very low obedience rate. I actually didn't look up to see what the obedience rate was because I got distracted by the fact that it was people who knew each other or were related to each other that did this. The thing is the teachers thought that they were administering shocks to these people. So let's say it was you and your sibling, and you were the teacher. So your sibling knew that this was fake and had to kind of ham it up, right, for their reactions. But you as the teacher didn't know that. And so you would be asked to shock your sibling. Now, some of you, you know, maybe you want to. But if you think about it afterwards and you're told, oh, it was just minor shocks, or it wasn't that big of a deal, blah, 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 or I assume your sibling probably said the truth and was like, hey, I wasn't getting shocked at all. But as the recipient of that, that means that your sibling or a partner or whomever was willing to shock you because you got an answer wrong. And so the damage created within these relationships wasn't even taken into consideration when he was running these experiments, which is just absolutely insane to me. So with all of that being said, in conclusion, there's much speculation and debate about the validity of Milgram's experiments due to their lack of true standardization and the ethical concerns of the methods. The archives have revealed that he cherry-picked a considerable amount of data, and some suggest that many subjects knew it was fake and obeyed to give the desired results to the experimenters. Whatever the case may be, more recent experiments done under modern ethical guidelines have provided remarkably similar results in rates of obedience to authority figures. It's also worth noting that both the National Science Foundation and Yale University were the institutions backing this research, knowing that there were risks. In fact, just before the NSF gave their final funding approval, they clarified that they would not be legally responsible for any negative effects on subjects. Taken from this larger perspective, these institutions proved his experiment before it even began. So what do you think? Was Milgram the bad guy, or was it everybody involved? How far should science be allowed to go in the name of discovery? Just some questions to think about, some food for thought as you move through the rest of your day. So take that as you will, and I hope that you all have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will be seeing you next Friday.